This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
Hello and welcome along to Yak Yarns. My name's Chelsea. I'm the Deputy Chairperson for the CDHB Youth Advisory Council. I have Professor Julia Rutledge joining us. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Chelsea. I'm delighted to be here.
I will let Julia kick off by telling us a little bit more about who she is and what she does.
Sure. Well, thank you, Chelsea, for this opportunity and invitation. I'm excited about being able to talk to young people about food. It's my passion, and I think we need to start getting it right a lot earlier in life, and that might avert a whole bunch of health issues. So, but essentially, I'm a clinical psychologist by training, but I've got it kind of diverted to another area of research over the last 10 years, where I've been very, very interested in the effects of food, that food and nutrition have on mental health. As a practicing psychologist, I really recognized that not enough people were getting well with our current conventional treatments, either if that's medication or if it's psychotherapy. You know, certainly in some cases, those treatments can be life-saving. And some of your listeners out there may well have been saved by some of those specific interventions. Yeah. But not enough. If you look at the data and you look at the big picture, not enough people are getting well. And so it's really important as scientists that we explore new opportunities and new ways of thinking about mental illness so that maybe we can have greater success at helping people who are struggling with mental health issues. So that's kind of my background. And so that's what my lab does. Te Puna Toyota is the Mental Health and Nutrition Research Group. And we do run clinical trials, which means that we invite people in and we usually give them nutrition in a pill form, vitamins and minerals in a pill form, because that's the easiest way to study it. Yes. And then we see what happens. And we have interventions for all kinds of different life challenges from, you know, stress and ADHD and depression and anxiety. So there's a whole bunch that goes on in my lab.
Awesome. I guess you kind of was going to answer my first question there, because I was going to ask about what you do in the lab. So that's awesome. I'm glad that you cover it. Like, it sounds really interesting in terms of like all the areas that you cover. Like, it's not just one specific area. You've got multiple ones. So that's really cool. Yeah. So I guess we're talking tonight about nutrition and mental health. So one of the questions that kind of came through was, what are nutrients? And I guess people have maybe heard the terms of macronutrients or micronutrients. So could you tell us a little bit more about what's the difference between the two of them?
Sure. Okay. All right. So we're going to dive into this chemistry of what are macronutrients and micronutrients. So I think people understand that nutrients are good for you. I think most people sort of get that part of it. Yeah. But we actually almost exclusively focus and hear about macronutrients for the most part. And that's your fats, your carbohydrates, and your proteins. And that's what you often will hear. If you read a package, you'll be interested in knowing that, you know, is it low in fat or is it low in carb? What's the ratio? Is there protein, et cetera? And so you think about, often people will think about foods from that perspective. Yeah. And I think that that's been a huge disservice to all of us by focusing so much on fats, carbs, and proteins. They are very important. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely important. But it feeds into this idea that you just need to get those right and then you're going to be fine. And as long as you don't, you know, you also watch out for your calories and you think about your food and that from that perspective, then you're going to be okay. And that enables a whole bunch of foods to be created that have fats, carbohydrates, and proteins in them, but are actually missing some really, really, really important nutrients, which is your micronutrients. And that's what I focused on a lot more in my research. And that is, micronutrients are essentially your vitamins and your minerals. And again, those are things that probably most people have heard of. They've heard of vitamin C and they've heard of vitamin D. And they'll have heard of certain minerals like iron or zinc or magnesium. So we're very familiar with those terms, but we don't understand probably how vital they are for our brain to operate, and that we typically don't make them. There are a few that we can make, but for the most part, we don't make them. And the only place that you can get these micronutrients out is out of your fresh produce. And whole foods, you won't be getting it out of your packaged foods. You're going to get it out of your whole foods. By whole foods, I mean your fruits and vegetables, your fish, your nuts, your beans, your lentils. Those are whole foods, real foods. And so the reason, though, that I want everyone to be thinking so much more about the vitamins and minerals that you can get out of these foods is because that's what your brain needs to make chemicals like neurotransmitters, which I'm sure, again, it's something that we're so familiar with. We've heard about these neurotransmitters like serotonin, because we've heard about it in the context of it being a mood, you know, a mood moderating neurotransmitter. But what people often don't know is that to make serotonin, your body needs these really important vitamins and minerals. And if you don't get them out of your food, your brain is going to be sluggish and slow. Its metabolic activity is going to be compromised because of the lack of these nutrients. So I hope that kind of gives you an answer a little bit about why we really want to be focusing on not just your macronutrients, but these micronutrients that really enable your brain to operate at its optimal.
Yeah, awesome. And I guess that's really important to touch on because, like you say, you know, we do focus on the carbs and the proteins and things like that, but we a lot of the times we do miss that thing. So this is a really big area that does need to be touched on. So it's really awesome that you're doing work in this. Another kind of question we seem to have just been answered, but someone wrote in and said that, you know, at school they talk about how we should be just eating our fruit and vegetables and we should be, you know, maybe eating healthy. Is there more to it than just that? You know, is that just what we should be doing, or should we be doing a lot more than that?
I think there's a lot more that you can do, but it's a good start. Yeah. So I'll give you a little bit of data. And that is that, you know, just going back to this idea about micronutrients, and that there's the foods that about between 50 to two-thirds of the foods that you buy in your supermarket are what I call ultra-processed foods. Mm. And ultra-processed food, it's astounding. So an ultra-processed food, I know you know what an ultra-processed food is. It's what's in a packet. It's got lots, a long list of ingredients. It typically is going to be high in sugar. It's going to make you feel good in the short term. It might taste really good, but it's going to be unsatisfying and you're going to be hungry in the next, you know, hour or so, or even sooner than that. Yeah. It's going to be those foods that easy to eat, but just aren't going to satisfy you in terms of giving your nutrients and your brain what it needs. And you're going to crash and you're going to end up with a lot of, like, just a lot of roller coasters in your mood and your anxiety as a consequence of eating these foods. So you might think, oh, well, then let's not eat them. And surely people don't eat them. And in fact, 50% of people, the diet of most people, 50% of it consists of these foods. And so it's almost that you're going hungry. You're not getting an adequate amount of nutrients in order to feed your body and your brain optimally, because you're essentially starving yourself of nutrients, of micronutrients, which are typically not contained in any adequate dose in those ultra-processed foods. Okay, so then the question is it, you know, just if I focus on making sure I get the five fruit and veg, which is actually a real minimum, I'd be going for 10, but you know, if you can hit 5, but actually the research shows that people don't even hit 5. So most people don't hit 5. So we're inadequate in our education in terms of making sure that we even hit that minimum number. But sometimes people think, okay, I have my five fruit and veg, and then that means I can eat anything else the rest of the time. And then that's wrong, because it's not a balancing thing. You can't like counter the bad effects of eating ultra processed food with eating some good foods. It's not how it works. So the ultra processed food is going to do harm to your body. And just because you might eat five fruit and vegetable day, it doesn't correct for the negative side of ultra processed food. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you can't do it that way. You can't, you know, go, okay, yeah, I can eat this, you know, bag of potato chips, but that's okay because I had, you know, a carrot an hour ago. It doesn't work that way. So, but the other thing is that when I was talking about whole foods, fruit and vegetables are just one piece of that whole food idea. And so I'd encourage your listeners to broaden out beyond the whole food, just the fruit and vegetables, and also think about, well, what else will I eat? And so in New Zealand, we are so fortunate. We have grass-fed, animals. They're not corn-fed, which is what you would get if you were in the United States. We're really, really lucky with the produce that's available here, that we've got these amazing farms, and that the animals are fed well and they got a lot of space, and that you can get access to really healthy, either meat, or you can get free range eggs. And so there's a lot of great, wonderful things. And the other thing that we can get in New Zealand is fish, which is also really good for our brains. And that does provide some of those really healthy fats that are important for us to develop. So big, long-winded answer to, yeah, fruit and vegetable is important. It's only one piece of that jigsaw puzzle, but it's not just about what you eat. It's also about what you don't eat. And I don't, you know, in my humble opinion, ultra processed food is not an essential item, and it should never have been during lockdown.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's not needed. You don't need it. You don't need any type of ultra processed food to survive.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, because you think of like uni students, like I'm a uni student myself, and so, you know, a lot of our diet is really ultra processed, and so
I know.
Changing it off is really happening, but
I've been there, I've done that, and I understand, and I know the negative consequences of it. And so it's not that you shouldn't ever eat those foods, but I would go for an 80-20 rule, which is 80% of the time you really should be eating whole foods, real foods. And then, you know, it's like three of your meals out of 21. That's not quite 20%, but, you know, can be something, you know, takeaway or something that, you know, it's going to be tasty, but might not necessarily be that great. That's okay. It's not, I'm saying don't ever eat it. It's just that don't make it the primary part of your meal.
Yeah. Cool. And kind of, I guess another question that came on and follows along with that is, someone had asked, well, what are the base nutrients that we should be having in our diet? What are the, you know, the key nutrients that we should be having?
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I always encourage people to not think about any single nutrient as being magic, because it's the combination that's probably the magic. You get the plants are what will make, are essentially are what get, have the vitamins, and they get their minerals out of getting the minerals out of the soil. And so you end up with about 15 vitamins, 15 minerals, plus or minus a few. And that's what you definitely need to make sure you consume, is that whole variety. You're going to get that variety if you eat a variety of different fruits and vegetables, but you'll also get it out of, say, other types of foods like nuts, like getting, and also you get phytonutrients out of eating fruits and vegetables as well, which is a whole bunch of nutrients that there's thousands of them that we still don't really understand. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, animals eat those plants, and so then you can get the vitamins and minerals that way as well, depending on what animals you may eat, or whether or not you can get the same types of some of those same nutrients out of eating fish, out of eating your legumes, your your beans, your lentils, those are also going to be high in nutrients. I hope that answered your question, but really, I don't want anyone to think they need that special nutrient and then they're going to be okay. I encourage people to move away from that kind of thinking.
Yeah. And so I guess that then follows into this question, which I think we now know the answer. But so we see the kind of multivitamin packs in the supermarkets. Yeah. Is this what we're talking about here? Is this what we should be taking, or is it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah, that's a great question, and not an easy one to answer. For the most part, those a multivitamin has been developed in order to prevent you from getting a frank nutritional deficiency, and that means getting something like scurvy. Have you ever heard of scurvy? It's like a vitamin C deficiency, and it's where your gums get really infected. And sailors used to die of scurvy on ships back in the 1600s. We don't hear much about it anymore because we have an adequate amount of vitamin C that you're going to either get through your food or through fortification, which does occur in some of those ultra processed foods. So you'll get enough to prevent you from getting scurvy. You'll also get enough to prevent you from getting something that's called rickets, which causes some bone breakage. We don't tend to see that anymore either. So a multivitamin prevents you from getting these really quite serious conditions, but it's not those, none of those things that are sold in the supermarket are giving you the dose of those nutrients at the level that the brain probably needs it at. And so that is the big difference between what we're doing in my lab and what you'd get out of a multivitamin that you buy in the supermarket, is that we're not only are we making sure that you get the full breadth of those 15 minerals and vitamins, 15 minerals, 15 vitamins, but you're also getting it at a dose that is probably going to have a positive effect on your brain. And just to give you an example of that, when we run our clinical trials, we're often asking people to take up to 12 pills a day, not one. So you can see the difference between what you're going to be getting out of what we're giving and testing, because we're testing the idea that you probably need a bit more in order to tackle a serious mental health issue. You wouldn't need 12 if you were using nutrients for something maybe not quite so serious, like say to help you manage stress. Our research shows that probably more like 4 of these broad spectrum multi-nutrient pills would probably be sufficient to help somebody who was struggling with stress. So I hope that answers your question. Is that, and the other thing is that none of the products, or most of the products, I won't say none, most of the products in a supermarket have never been studied for brain health.
Wow.
So I can't comment really on whether or not they're going to be effective, but my guess is probably not.
Wow. That's interesting, because you think about it, like, you know, if you think of it, like I've been told previously by doctors, you know, go just take that vitamin and you'll be fine. It'll be better for you. But it's, guess, you know, it misses, like you say, it misses the multivitamin rather than like, you know, than the just one. You're missing the nutrients. You miss it. Yeah. So that's really interesting. And I guess, again, you've kind of answered it, but just to clarify for someone had written in about they live at home, and so their parents do the shopping, so they don't have like heaps of influence over what they get. But what can they be encouraging their parents to buy?
What a lovely question. Isn't that wonderful? I think if my children had the opportunity to try to influence what we bought, it probably wouldn't be in a positive direction, is my guess. Exactly what I've said, which is the whole is focus on the whole foods. You know, if you're constrained by budget, then things like black beans or lentils, I've mentioned those a few times, but that's because they're cheap and you can they're nutrient dense and they're a great food in terms of easy to cook. It doesn't take long to learn how to use those, and I think people underestimate that and they don't use them probably as much as they could. So that could be something to start testing out recipes on the internet. There's so many recipes out there that you can give it a go. And, you know, just if you've got is say kale and quinoa, then put those two things into the internet and go, okay, what can I actually make out of kale and quinoa? And you would be amazed at what opportunities and new taste sensations you can get by just combining a few new ingredients. So it could be just about being, you know, going for something new that you haven't tried before and trying it out at home in terms of how do you cook this particular type of food. But then it would be about, you're obviously your veg in season. You know, there's no point in buying vegetables out of season because it's just going to be more expensive. And right now, so that would be your cauliflowers, your broccoli, your leeks, your root vegetables, your potatoes, your parsnips. It would be the carrots are, you know, a good option. So it'd be those types of foods at this time of year. So I hope, and then, you know, nuts are more expensive, but certainly some nuts, just even if you sprinkle some almonds on your salad, that would be a good place, and always have a salad. You can start, you know, certainly even, you know, if this person with their question is such a fantastic question for a young person, maybe they think about a vegetable garden and, you know, grow your own kale or grow your own spring onions. Easy.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great tips and ideas there because, yeah, that's cool. But, yeah, it was a really cool question to come in because, you know, it's getting young people interested is what we wanted. So, yeah, having that question come through was really cool. Another one that we kind of now going a bit more into mental illness, and someone had asked the questions, are nutrients an alternative to treating mental illness? So I guess this kind of maybe comments on what you've been doing research on. So
yeah. I would say definitely yes. Our research is robust enough, not just from my lab, but from around the world, that some people can see complete remission in their mental illness just with using nutrients. So just with using nutrients in the formulas that we've studied. So I can't, as I said, you're not going to treat a serious mental health issue by going to the supermarket and buying a one a day. That's not going to work. Yeah. But using the nutrients that we study or something like that that's been researched and studied, then yes, some people experience full remission. It doesn't always, it sometimes can take time. So it may not be it likely won't be overnight, although we have seen some people get really well in just a couple of weeks. It tends to be a bit more of a gradual change over time. But you can use nutrients in order to treat serious psychiatric illnesses, which is probably surprising to many listeners because the expectation is that nutrition is just irrelevant to the brain. That's what I was taught when I went through graduate school. Mm-hmm. And it's what often a lot of us are taught and what physicians are taught, that nutrients are just aren't curative to that degree. And there's enough research now over the last 10 years that if anybody says that it can't be used curative, like in that kind of treatment capacity, then it means that they probably aren't up to date on the literature. So there's research on diet manipulation that you can just change your diet. And there was a study that came out of Australia a couple of years ago now that showed that just changing diet meant with people who were struggling with depression, a third of them went into remission. Third of them after, I think it was about an 8-week study. So 2 months and a third of them went into remission, which to me says, yes, that's certainly a treatment as powerful as some of the other treatments that are on offer. With ADHD, that's some of the work that I've been involved in. We see it's usually about 45 to 50% of people do really well. And 30% of people have a mild, modest change. And then about 20% we see no benefit. And it is important to recognize that some people do not respond to this intervention. So it's not going to work for everybody. But to have about half of your group having a pretty substantial response, and again, usually about 2 months, is really great news. Yeah. It's great news because this is an intervention that doesn't carry the same level of side effects that we often see with the medications that are used. And so that profile can be much better for people especially if they've experienced other treatments that may not have helped them as well and may have carried a heavier side effect load. Yeah. So yeah, that's my answer, is that yes, it can. And it can do it on its own. And in fact, it tends to be, it's to the point where I would, the interactions, we do see interactions with medications. So that's your psychiatric medications, like your antidepressants, your anxiolytics, your antipsychotics. That can be more difficult. So for those of you out there who are on those medications, you'd need to talk to your physician about using nutrients in combination with the drugs. My lab does provide sort of a, general information about this topic. So we're always happy to receive emails from people in from the members of the public, just to get that kind of starting point, part of the journey of just that basic information. If I want to try the nutrients, what's being researched, what are the formulas that have been researched, and then also this very important issue about the drug nutrient interaction. So just for those .ac.nz is our lab email, and so my graduate students answer those emails and provide that kind of information. So awesome. Mental health nutrition at canterbury.ac.nz. I'm not a commercial enterprise. I'm not selling anything. We're not involved in any of that. So we just provide information for the public.
Awesome. And we'll chat that up on our Facebook page as well, again, so that people can get in contact. But that's awesome. It's really cool to hear the research, because, I would say that's pretty significant results coming from you guys and from other research. Like, that's pretty significant when you think about it. Yeah, it's just a massive difference to people's lives that isn't being talked about enough. And so that's really cool.
Exactly. We've seen some amazing transformations, absolutely stunning transformations. So in some people who have, probably gotten to the end of the road, who thought this was the last ditch. So, and I also got emails from people who have just heard about our work and then contact us just to let us know about what an amazing effect it's had on them. So I know they're out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. And kind of following on from that, someone had asked, so you may or may not be able to fully answer this right now, but someone had kind of been really specifically asked, what nutrients should they be taking if they specifically experience depression or anxiety?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my answer would be, it wouldn't be different. And so that might be counterintuitive. You might think, okay, well, if I'm depressed, I take an antidepressant, or if I'm psychotic, I take an antipsychotic. That's kind of the conversation we hear about in the dialogue. And when it comes to using nutrition as a treatment, it seems to be that what it does is it provides the foundation that your body needs in order to operate optimally. So it's making sure that all your cells are getting the nutrients that it needs in order to, perform its functions, to metabolize, to make neurotransmitters, to make hormones, all the things that your body does. So it's just leveling the playing field. And so then that means that sort of filters up into being able to manage your mood better, because you have the nutrients available to make the neurotransmitters that are required to moderate your mood. Or it can help you concentrate better because it's providing the nutrients that are important to, say, moderate dopamine, which we know is one of the players in moderating your concentration. So it's just providing all that foundation so that everything can kind of operate better. And it's interesting that when we do our research, even though we're targeting specific disorders, ADHD or depression, what we hear the most is that the effect is that it seems to calm and help people regulate emotions a lot better than they were, more stabilized, and that they will hear about benefits across the board. So we'll hear that their sleep might have gotten better, or they just seem to be able to cope better with stress now that they're on the nutrients, or they're just not responding quite the same way with anger or irritability. They seem to be able to concentrate better, or they're just more regulated. So in answer then to the question that was asked, we don't change the combination of nutrients that we use depending on what we're studying. We always use the same concept, the same idea, which is a broad spectrum of nutrients, about your 15 minerals, about your 15 vitamins. So that's what we tend to use, always the same. And we don't modify that. It's not I'm not a developer of micronutrient formula. So I wouldn't even know how to do that anyway. Yeah. But we just take that basic principle is let's make sure people are well nourished and everything else will take care of itself.
Wow, that's really interesting because, yeah, like you said before, that like, you know, there's a different medications for different ones. So it's really interesting that it's absolutely the same across the board.
Yeah,
and so someone, I guess because we've been talking mental illness, someone had asked the question, and I feel like you've probably answered it, but just to, you know, double check, someone had kind of asked, are nutrients only helpful for people with mental illness, or are they helpful for everyone across the board, no matter what?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So if you're someone, if there's listeners out there who are functionally really well, and they have great sleep, and they're very regulated, and they don't have any digestive issues, and they can concentrate when they go to school, and their energy is good, and their mood is generally pretty stable, and they don't get kind of, you know, affected by life's adversity, that they kind of roll with the punches. There are people like that. I would say they're amazing. You don't probably need anything more. Whatever you're doing right now, you're doing it right. And so I'd say just keep doing that and you don't need any more nutrients. But let's face it, we live in an environment where there is a lot of there's a lot of stressors, no more than I think our ancestors. I mean, they had to deal with world wars and the Holocaust and other, you know, a time when there was no antibiotics and things like that. So I don't think the stressors have changed. But one thing that may have changed over the last 100 years is that, you know, and I'm just going to divert a little bit off your question to just say that our food supply is not as nourishing as it used to be. And that is a huge, huge problem. And that is that the nutrient density of that, of our, even our fruits and vegetables that we think are healthy may not be as dense as it was, say, 100 years ago. And that's got to do with farming practices. It's got to do with climate change. It's got to do with the toxins that we use, that, sorry, I shouldn't call them toxins, pesticides that are used on the plants in order to prevent the pests from attacking the plants or from weeds, that kind of thing. So we've really changed our agricultural practices really quite dramatically over a very short period of time. We don't replenish the soil with those approximately 15 minerals anymore. So you don't end up with that huge variety, and that will compromise the plant's ability to make the vitamins. And so you've got this cascade of problems that means that the food is not as nourishing as we'd like it to be. Yeah. So I'm not sure where I was going with that, but trying to remember. So the question around, what was the question again?
It was just asking if it was like beneficial for everyone or if it was just for people with mental illness.
Okay, so you've got your person who's amazing, they're probably fine. And they're probably dealing, like they're not sensitive to those depletions in the food nutrient space. Okay, because there's going to be some people who are like that. They just seem to survive on nothing and they do well. So there are people out like they're lucky. But for most of us, we've got this depletion that's happening in our environment in the nutrient quantity. And then we've got stressors. I know where I was going. So we've got stressors. And so that means that we're probably maybe less resilient to deal with those stressors than our ancestors, because our food isn't providing us with the nutrients that our bodies need to function optimally and to deal with those stressors. So think about stress as being, you know, what the stress response does is it triggers your fight-flight response. We all know the fight-flight response. If you're from Christchurch, you experienced it with all the earthquakes. So, you know, that adrenaline surge and the need to, you know, make sure that you're going to be safe and you're not going to be harmed. So run away or fight, keep yourself get yourself to safety. And that's essential for survival. If we didn't have a good operating fight flight response, we'd be dead. So it's important that gets the priority. So your nutrients that you consume in your diet, they're going to always go to your fight flight response first. They're always going to go there first. And so if that's constantly getting triggered because there's so many stressors, and right now we've got things like climate change stress, we've got COVID-19 stress, we've got financial stress, we've got uncertainty, you're going to deplete yourself of those nutrients. And so you have less available for everything else. Moderating your mood, making sure you can concentrate, regulating your sleep. And so in those circumstances, I would even say that that top up, I was describing earlier, well, in those circumstances, we've shown that just taking 4 pills a day in our research after the earthquakes, we found was enough to get people to get back on track in terms of reduction of stress. There's also a really wonderful body of research that's been done on just the B vitamins. So that's your B12 or your niacin, your B1, B2, B2. I mean, people have heard of those sometimes those terms used. That just those B vitamins can be really helpful. So Baraka actually has got some good research on it to help with stress. That is one that I said there are some in the supermarket, and that would be one that I would say actually does seem to help people with reduction of stress. But the broad spectrum with your minerals does even better. So, that you can get some benefit from the B vitamins. You get an even greater benefit based on our research and research that's been done in other natural disasters. You do even better with your broad spectrum of nutrients. So I hope that answers the question, is that I don't think about people either having a mental illness or not. I think it's always on a continuum. And the continuum simply means that we may use a higher dose of the nutrients. You're more depleted and you may need more because of the severity. But I certainly don't see the world in the black and white of you either have ADHD or you don't, or you either have depression or you don't.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about your kind of research with natural disasters as well. It's something, again, that you probably wouldn't think about, but just to hear the kind of response from people with stress is really interesting. Someone had also written in, so you've kind of touched base about ADHD, and people have kind of heard about some of your research happening with ADHD, and people were, someone had written in and asked, what are you seeing in terms of nutrition and nutrients with ADHD?
Sure. If people are familiar with ADHD, then they may know that the primary treatment for ADHD is a stimulant medication, Ritalin, methylphenidate, and there might be variants on that, like Rubifen or generics that are used, and there's a few other varieties, but that's the sort of the typical standard treatment for ADHD. And there's a reason that's your standard treatment, because it's very fast and it's very effective in the short term. And there's nothing that I've ever heard of that is going to be more effective in the short term than those medications. But the challenge of those medications is that they do come alongside some side effects that can be difficult for some people to manage, in particular the loss of appetite and the effect that it has on sleep, so insomnia. So that is difficult, and that is difficult for parents to manage. Some kids are just fine and they're okay on those ones, whereas others experience more. But they also experience something that's called rebound or withdrawal every time they come off of that medication at the end of the day. Parents often have to deal with that. And so it's like there's an onset of irritability in their children and sort of just a change in mood that can also be difficult for the child and also difficult for the family to manage. So there are some downsides to the stimulants, even though in the short term, they can be very effective at helping improve attention and hyperactivity and impulsivity, within the school environment. With the nutrients, what we observed was that it was a slower effect, so you don't get this quick effect. But it's a very, what I always like to say, it's just gradually over time, these kids seem to get better in their ADHD symptoms. But also, in everything that goes alongside it. And there's mood dysregulation is often, sort of a core feature of ADHD, even though it's not part of the diagnostic criteria, but you often see a lot of dysregulation and mood in those kids. And so the nutrients really do seem to help that, which is a wonderful effect that you don't get out of necessarily out of the stimulant treatments. So we also just see, we hear about them being healthier. Those are anecdotal, but we do hear about them just being generally healthier and just feeling, you know, physically stronger. They tend, they grow a bit more than kids who they there's a they grow a little bit more than the kids who we've been had on placebo. It's not a, a significant effect, but it was an interesting sort of trend that we observed, which you wouldn't get with a stimulant. You'll get the opposite effect. So but over time, when we see these kids who stay on the nutrients, who had ADHD in there, and we see them again a year later, they're doing really, really well. The kids who stay on the nutrients do really well. They're in remission. So 80% of, in fact, our data show that 80% of people who stay on the nutrients are in remission of their disorder when we follow them up at 1 year. Now, that's a select group because those are the people who stay on the nutrients. And so the nutrients, unfortunately, are not paid for by Pharmac or by our public healthcare system. So families either have to pay or use their WINS disability allowance and to make the decision to use that for purchasing the nutrients. So that's some of the challenges that we face. But when they do stay on, they do really well, and they do better than the kids who switch to medications as well. And that's something that we've replicated. So those are exciting findings in the long term, that we see some wonderful benefits for these kids who do stay on the nutrients. And, you know, in some kids just who were going off on a trajectory of, you know, I would have thought, oh, you know what, if this kid keeps going this way, these are possibly the kinds of kids that are going to end up incarcerated. We've been able to divert a lot of kids going that direction. So that's been really, really positive.
Yeah, that is awesome to kind of hear like that. Yeah, again, it's just the different change in treatment and impact, but the massive change that it's having in, you know, these kids' lives.
For some kids.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Not all of them. And some find that they prefer medication, and that's fine, but at least they have the choice. They've at least tried the nutrients and they decided that, you know what, they prefer the effect of medications. That's okay.
Yeah. And I think like the key point you just said is the choice. It's giving the actual option that this exists.
Well, at the moment we have an unfair choice.
Cool. So someone kind of then asked just a bit of a general kind of question, but what would be your tips then about, I guess, starting a really good nutrition process? You know, what are small changes that we can be making?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, you don't go from eating crap food to eating whole foods overnight. And so it's a commitment to gradually change. And I wouldn't do it quickly. I would do it gradually. So make some very small baby step goals. You know, what is manageable? And don't do it when you're under a lot of stress, like when there's a lot going on. Do it at a time when you can manage doing some changes. So, you know, for example, do you drink, you know, I don't know, 2 cans of Coke every day? Can we reduce that down? Can you start to change that soda consumption so that you can eventually get it, wean yourself off of it over time and replace it with something else? Like, it could be that you replace it with something like a soda stream. That might be a good option, just because if you like that fizzy taste and you don't like the taste of water. Or, but ultimately I would say the things that you should be drinking are, you know, your tea, coffee in moderation, water, milk. What else? You don't need anything else. There's nothing, no other beverage that I would say is necessary for life, even I guess tea and coffee and milk. Water really is. We can survive on just water, but that may not be the most exciting option. So doing some of those baby steps, start maybe even doing some home baking. That could be a baby step towards eating some, if you like the taste of sweet things, at least you have control over what you're making, and you can have control over how much sugar goes into it. So that could be a sort of a starting point, and just say, I'm not going to buy any more packaged, you know, biscuits, only going to home bake. If you do that, you're probably going to eat, hopefully you're going to eat less if you kind of make that kind of commitment. So there's, and you also get rid of some of the additives that can go into the packaged goods. So really it's about, for me, it's about getting people to recognize that there's not a single study that's shown that eating packaged goods has been good for our mental or physical health. Mm-hmm. It's not a necessity of life. So starting to recognize that. And it's kind of like smoking, right? It's at that state, it's at that level of these foods are not necessary for us to live. They're not necessity of life, whereas whole foods are. So if we could treat it that way, then that's where we could actually have government changes, we could have policy changes, you could start treating it the way it is, which is an addiction, and which is that it's a hazard to our health rather than healthful.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a really good kind of point to make, is that, needing to get that change in. And I think it's so important. This, like, these conversations are great to be starting, but there's definitely so much more change of things that need to be done, for sure. And I guess a question that kind of came in was around your mental health and nutrition group. Are there any opportunities or ways that young people can be involved with your group?
Yes, there are. I was just about to I was writing that down to make sure that I plugged our current studies.
Yeah, go for it.
So we have quite a few exciting things that are going on right now. We have the STAR trial. So anybody who goes to, goes to my research page, I'm so easy to track down, Julia Reckledge. If you've got, everyone's got the spelling of that name from the pod, the advertising, you can end up very easily finding our research page. And the STAR trial is one that's going right now with undergraduate students. So that's absolutely your target market. It's for 16 and over, but they need to be at university and at UC.
Okay.
So we're recruiting. We're actually testing a slightly different version of the nutrients. It's not in a capsule form. It's in a powder form. So it's just something you just tip it onto your tongue and you hold it in your mouth for a while. It's got a really yummy flavor. And then we're interested to see whether or not that has an effect on stress in students. Mm. So that would be the number one for your group, I think, any listeners out there. And just all they have to do is look for the STAR trial. And I know it's widely advertised on the UCSA. Have you seen it?
Yes,
oh, you're not. Yeah. Oh, you have. Okay, good.
I have seen it, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. So the other one is the NOMAD trial, which is one that's for 18 and over. And it's targeting people who are struggling with depression and anxiety. So that's 18 up, any age group above that. And that's testing the nutrients compared to placebo. And there's another one that's coming up that's also going to be in your age range. It's going to be 12 to 18 year olds, but it's not going to start until next year. But I'm really excited about this one, which is that we want to help young people because we recognize that young people are struggling a lot more than they used to. There does seem to be more serious challenges for young people. And that they are struggling a lot more with mental health. So, or maybe they're just more willing to share or to seek help, which maybe that's obviously a positive. We also, though, recognize that there's not enough services. And so there's not enough counselors, coach, to go around to help the young people who are willing to seek help. So we're going to be offering a online treatment, meaning that people will have access to a psychologist who they will connect just like you and I have connected today. And that person will monitor them over time while they take the nutrients or placebo. So that will be just mailed to them, and they take those in conjunction with having a support person available to them if they needed it. So that gives us the opportunity to be able to reach a lot more young people, and we can also reach them in rural communities, which is one of the challenges.
Yeah.
So pretty excited about that study, which
it
is going to launch early next year. So those are the ones if any of your listeners are pregnant and are struggling with mental health issues, then we also have the NutriMum trial, which is running in Canterbury, actually nationwide now. So that's going to close over the next 6 weeks. So we're only recruiting until middle of September for that one. And it is is trying to see whether or not we can use nutrients to help moms who struggle with depression and or anxiety during their pregnancy.
Wow, so there's some really exciting opportunities out there for people to get involved with. So we'll
Absolutely.
definitely be putting your website and things up on our
Yeah,
Facebook
and
page so people can get
they're
involved.
all listed. They're all listed on our we and if the people just like our Facebook page. So if you just go if you're on Facebook and you just search Julia Rutledge, you'll find our the you'll find my personal one, which doesn't have a lot of followers, and I don't accept. I mean, I just post pictures of my dog and things like that. The one you want is the Julia. I think it's called Julia Rutledge Mental Health and Nutrition. Pretty sure that's what it's called. It'll be pretty obvious. And then follow that, and that's where we post, advertise. Put interesting things up.
Cool. So we're just kind of going to end the night with a final question that we ask every speaker. What is one thing that you would like young people to take away from this conversation tonight?
I think, Chelsea, that's probably fairly obvious, which is that you should care about what you feed to your brain.
Thank you so much, Julia, for joining us tonight. We've really appreciated having you. Thanks for sharing all your wisdom about this topic. It's so cool to hear what you've been doing and your research. So, thanks so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks, Chelsea.
Yak Yarns for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.